SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Hello and welcome to the second episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And joining me today, again, just like the first time, is Dave Kale from Los Angeles.
Good morning, Father.
How is life at the other end of the planet?
It's pretty good. It's a little rainy yesterday, but it's nice and sunny this morning.
All right. Hey, I just realized that you actually are just 3 hours away from New Zealand. Actually, in terms of time zones, I was looking up some friends in New Zealand. I've got a number of friends that are looking into perhaps joining us on the show from time to time and giving us kind of the inside scoop on what's happening in New Zealand. And in order to figure out a common time, because I live in Europe, of course, I found that actually you're just 3 hours away in terms of time zone. So you're really close to the fire, close to all the action.
That's right.
So did you apply for a role as an extra in the movies?
I thought about it, but I guess technically you have to be a New Zealand citizen or have a work permit to actually get one.
Oh, so no guest appearances.
No, I don't think I'll be able to make it. We might be able to get you in since you're an internet celebrity, but but I'm willing to make an exception for you.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I even want to. it's going to be a little bit, I think, time. How do you say that? It's going to cost a lot of money and a lot of time to fly in for just an extra role. Although I imagine that a lot of people in New Zealand are very excited and very motivated to get into the movies. And I think our first story of the day is actually that there's been another casting call for extras. And I think in December or November last year, they put out a call for extras that could play hobbits. And they were looking for people of a certain size. You know, you couldn't be taller than I don't know exactly what. And so apparently they already have a lot of extras cast as hobbits. But recently there's been a call for elves, isn't it?
Yes. I'm looking at the link right now. Yeah, it looks like they're for this. I heard that for the hobbit roles, they were looking for men under 5'7" and women under 5'2". For uh-huh. the elf roles, they're looking for men over 6 feet and women over 5'9".
That's taller than I am, so I wouldn't stand a chance.
Okay. You're off. You're out. and they're skewing young too. They only want people 17 to 40, because obviously elves are sort of, at least in appearance, ageless.
Yeah, except for the Matrix dude.
Yes.
Oh boy!
They'll have to make an exception for. They'll just have.
Well, but he's very old, isn't he, Elrond? In terms,
yes,
compared to the other elves, he is like a super elf in terms of age.
Yeah, compared to most of them left in Middle Earth, he's pretty old. Although he's worn in the years well.
Yeah, but then it kind of makes sense that he looks slightly older than 40. And do they say anything about other physical traits for the elves? I guess the hair color doesn't really matter because they can fake that with wigs.
Really don't say anything else. Although they do mention they're looking for people to play elven horse riders. So I'm gonna guess that they'll be biased toward people who can actually ride horses.
They don't say anything about weight, for instance.
No, they don't. Yeah,
you can get very tall people that are, you know, like morbidly obese trying to apply for the role of elves, but I've never seen obese
linemen trying to get in.
Like, they can always.
They're like 6'4" and 350 pounds.
they might be cast as dwarves, because after all, what's his name, the actor who played oh man, I'm just totally blanking out on all the names right now. The Lord of the Rings actor who played the dwarf,
John Rhys-Davies.
Yes, that's the guy. He was actually very, very tall, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it was so weird to see him in the extras on the DVD.
Yes, he's 6'1". He was actually extremely tall.
Yeah, and so that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, they really, really did a heck of a job making him look short because he doesn't look 6'. He's probably one of the tallest people in the cast, and yet he consistently looks shorter.
Yes.
And I don't know. It's been a long time since I watched the extras. I can't remember what did they have him like standing on his knees in some scenes?
Well, they all did. For a lot of the scenes, even the hobbits, they were just on their knees, which saves a lot of special effects money, I guess. And then in other scenes, I just watched the other day the final scenes of The Return of the King. And in that final scene where everybody bows down in front of the hobbits, that's, you can clearly tell that they've been kind of projected into the scene, and there's something slightly off, which is, by the way, something that struck me kind of rewatching some of the scenes of these movies. Is like, I remember these special effects to be flawless, and now I was rewatching it, it's like, wow, that looks almost like a two-dimensional projection inside a three-dimensional environment. it looked a bit fake. And I guess that I prefer the scenes where they just used in-camera effects instead of doing the special effects, because I don't know if the special effects, the quality of special effects and what computers can do nowadays, it's evolving so quickly that I think once The Hobbit gets out, the Lord of the Rings trilogy will look very dated in terms of the quality of the special effects.
Have you ever gone back and watched things like Jurassic Park and things from like back in the 90s? Those are things, again, that blew you away when you watch them. And when you go back and watch them now, you're kind of like,
yeah,
wow, it's a little dated.
And I remember at least a few scenes in the original Lord of the Rings movies that even when watching it in theaters, I was like, I don't know if I like these special effects. Especially the one thing that stuck out for me, and it's part of the third movie that I really didn't like, was the transformation of into Gollum. You know, that whole, you know, where they morphed the actor and slowly he became this digital character. But there was just such an abyss between the physical appearance of the actor and then the digital Gollum that it didn't work for me. And
there was sort of this jump from the sort of last makeup stage.
Yes, exactly.
The animated thing where his eyes doubled in size.
Right, exactly. And there's like, no way.
Yep, a little lame.
Yeah, of course it was kind of an homage to the actor and get him in. So he can say, well, I was actually really on the screen. But I don't know, it just didn't work. And I wish they hadn't done it. But anyway, back to the Hobbit. We were talking about the dwarves. There's been a press conference with, I think, all the actors that will play the dwarves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I guess all of them, plus Martin Freeman, the Hobbit guy, Bilbo. Yeah, they held it back on Friday in the morning in Wellington, I think. And they basically just had all the main cast, the 13 dwarves plus Bilbo, they read a statement from Peter Jackson, who of course is currently in the hospital with a perforated ulcer.
Indeed.
The poor guy.
Let's listen to a small clip. I'm not going to play the whole press conference, obviously, because it's about 30 minutes long. But here's the part where the lady that kind of introduces the actors is reading the message by Peter Jackson.
Today, but he's written something for me to pass on, so I will go ahead and read it. I'd like to welcome everyone to this first opportunity to meet many of the key cast of The Hobbit. I'd love to be with you all this morning, but I'm currently under a medical form of house arrest to prevent me from overdoing it until fully recovered from my recent operation. I'll be jumping back into it very soon, and to be honest, the guys that you'll be talking to this morning make me laugh so hard right now I'd be in danger of popping a few stitches. We take casting very seriously on every film we make, and we couldn't be more delighted with the group of wonderful actors we have gathered here. Those of you who are familiar with The Hobbit will know the importance of the comradeship between Bilbo and each of his 13 dwarf adventurers. I couldn't be more excited about working with these actors and the others soon to join us. I'm feeling these movies are going to be something very special. Cheers, Peter J.
So that was the message that they read, and of course, Peter Jackson is healing of his ulcer, and he will be, of course, back in a couple of weeks. The actors, though, have already been in New Zealand for quite a while, according to what I've read. They're already kind of working out and doing some training. They're practicing horse riding because they will be doing that for a lot of, you know, in a lot of scenes, and so they need to master that. And they were practicing accents as well. So I don't know, probably. I don't know the nationalities of all of these actors that will play the dwarves, but I assume that they will all use the same, probably British accent. And for some of them,
yeah,
that might
sort
be
a pseudo Middle Earth British accent. I think there's a mixture of. I know Martin Freeman and Richard Armitage and one of the other guys whose name I can't remember. Where is he?
Yeah, we need to have those IMDb pages open all the time.
I know. Or Graham McTavish. I think a lot of those guys are from Britain or you know various parts of the United Kingdom. But I'm guessing at least some of them must be probably Australian or Kiwis or something.
So
yeah, we gotta go study up on these guys because
absolutely
some of them are unknowns.
Well, that was the funny thing. They were introduced one by one, and then of course there was only a small group of journalists present. So these actors enter one by one, and they get like a little bit of applause, but it's almost nothing. And I was like already kind of looking forward to the moment that the movie comes out, and then they will go to these fan. Meetings or celebrations, and then the kind of cheer that they will get after the movie is out and, they're all famous. That's going to be such a contrast. It's going to be fun to rewatch that first press conference and then kind of having a totally different experience, because I was watching all these actors like I don't know any of them except for the Hobbit guy. Because he was in the English, the British version of The Office. And he was in Hot Fuzz. What's the name of that movie again? Anyway, Hot Fuzz, I think. So, your first impressions of the cast, at least the dwarven cast.
The ones that I know, I think, are excellent actors. I'm really excited. We talked about this in last episode, Martin Freeman and Richard Armitage I've seen in other things, and I really enjoyed them, and I think they'll be great. And the other guys, a couple of them, I think I may have seen them in something, and they seemed fine there. So I will say that from the previous movies, for the most part, with a few exceptions of characters where I don't really like the way they played it or whatever, I think Peter Jackson's strength has been his casting. I mean, they just have always gotten really, really good people who visually fit the part and who also just do a great job delivering good performances. So I'm optimistic that it will be the same case here. I mean, I'll be honest, looking at these guys, it's hard to, you try to do the transformation in your mind where you're like, well, okay, what's this guy going to look like as a dwarf? And plus, I don't know about you, but I grew up having watched the old Rankin and Bass cartoon version of The Hobbit, mm-hmm. and that has polluted my mental image of The Hobbit and also Lord of the Rings for a long time. And in their version of dwarves are these like very cartoony little sort of gnomish little guys with long white beards and pointy hats and so on. Trying to imagine these guys as that doesn't work too well. And I'm hoping they don't do that.
No, and actually the thing that struck me is that all these actors look very differently. And even in their whole, their mannerisms and their posture and the way they walk, they are very, very different from one another. And so that seems to indicate that probably visually they will go for a very different look for each dwarf, which I think it's going to be purging our memories of those cartoon versions that we saw.
Well, and also Thorin Oakenshield, I think, is supposed to be he's sort of maybe young in general or middle age for dwarves, but he's actually relatively oldish, and so I'll be interested to see how they turn Richard Armitage into Thorin Oakenshield, because you know Richard's a pretty sort of young looking guy, and he's like tall and lithe and thin and all that. So their makeup and costuming was excellent in The Lord of the Rings. So I'm sure they'll do a great job, and I'm sure he'll be a great Thorin. I'm sure he's going to be good.
And there too, makeup technology, because that is what it is almost nowadays. It's chemistry, technology, yes, all combined with traditional makeup has also evolved so much. Just the other day, I had to do a photo shoot for some media work that I do in the Netherlands, and mm-hmm. the girl that was doing my the makeup for the photos actually told me that she had been involved in a lot of special effects makeup for the last few years, and it was actually a way to get more jobs, because just doing makeup nowadays just doesn't cut it anymore. Almost every TV series, every movie now has special effects makeup, like gunshot wounds and everything, but even entire amputated limbs or extra limbs on people's bodies. And she's working for a guy who is has a small company that is now has international fame, and so he's been called into so many different countries in the world to do makeup and to help out, and so she was just chatting about the way that they create all this, these fake noses, and how to do the aging of actors, and at one point they came in to call me for the photos. I was like, no, I want to sit here for another hour. I just want to hear everything about how you do beards and how you make dwarves look believable. But that's all going to be Weta, of course. They're going to stick with that for all the visual effects, I assume. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see the first costume photos, the first photos from the set, because I'm sure that once they start filming, in order to get us as a potential audience excited, there will be photos from the set, official ones and leaked ones, and so it's gonna. I'm already looking forward to those moments where we are all, we've seen the first photo of the Hobbit, the of Bilbo Baggins, the new Bilbo Baggins. It's gonna be very, very exciting.
Man, these guys are going to have long days, too. Every morning they're going to have to get up and go get the face prosthetics and the beards put on and the costuming. And, it's going to – I remember in the special features them talking about with the Hobbit guys even, and they were just doing – they didn't have to do a lot with their faces. These guys, these poor guys, going to be long days.
I think so, too. And the Hobbit have the feet, of course, whereas dwarves have shoes, right? Or even boots, I assume.
They get to wear boots at least.
That must be much more comfortable than those fake Hobbit feet, and safer too, because I remember that one behind the scenes interview where they talk about one of the actors, one of the Hobbits, actually stepped into a piece of glass. He had to. Oh, that was just a horrible story, and the glass just went straight through the rubber of the fake foot and pierced his foot, basically.
Yeah, that was Sean Astin when they were doing the scene in the river where Frodo at the end of Fellowship of the Ring, where Frodo's trying to leave without him, and he runs out into the river, and there was a piece of glass, and he went right through his foot, and they had to. Didn't they have to helicopter him out of there?
Because they are usually in the middle of nowhere. I mean, New Zealand is a beautiful country, but it's also a very empty country. It's not that, around each corner there's a big hospital. So, I would think that now they will probably have the budget to have a medical crew, or perhaps even like a portable hospital or something like that for the actors, so that they don't have to fly them into Wellington or something. But Yeah, this movie is probably going to have a much bigger budget and much less concern financially than the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where they had to do so much with so little, and yet the result was stunning.
Which is amazing, because I'm sure that even that wasn't a, I don't know, what was the budget for those movies?
I don't know.
Looking it up.
Yeah, we can always look that up on the Internet Movie Database. While you do that, let me read to our readers a few excerpts of the interview of the media conference with the actors, at least the dwarven actors, and here are some of the things that were said. Martin Freeman, who is going to play Bilbo Baggins, is talking about how he is going to live up to the portrayal of Bilbo Baggins by Ian Holm. He says, I think I'm quite a good match for him. I can't be playing Ian Holm, but here is, but there's that echo to what he did. He was also confident enough to joke about the delays the film has suffered. There are some bits of bad luck associated with it. We are ready to go just as soon as 2015 comes around. So. And then, there's this urban legend of the curse of the ring or something like that. That's so that every Hobbit or Tolkien related production will have all these setbacks. Of course, that's superstition, but anyway, it's good to see that the actors at least are confident that by 2015 they'll probably be filming.
They've had their share on this one already. They had the set fire back in the fall, and Peter Jackson's health problems, Guillermo del Toro dropping out of the production last spring.
But so. Doesn't every production have those setbacks? I remember when George Lucas started to film The Phantom Menace, they went back to Tunisia to film the scenes on Tatooine, and the whole set was destroyed by a big sandstorm, which was almost identical to what happened when they were filming Episode 4. You know, years before that, they were also in Tunisia, and there was also this big sandstorm that destroyed everything and set them back. So there too is immediately you got, you know, some people developing some global intergalactic conspiracy theory of, I don't know, the Romulans sabotaging the filming of I don't know what. In other news, James Nesbitt, who's going to play the dwarf Beaufour, talked about the problems, the union problems that threatened the production last year. And he said, it would have been very odd for the production not to be in New Zealand. It is an adventure, not only professionally, but personally as well. Rob Gazinski, who also plays one of the dwarves, added that keeping the film in New Zealand would lend a certain continuity, as it will be shot in locations people will already know. Then the cast was asked how they would cope with rabid Hobbit fans. New Zealand actor Jed Brophy quipped, well, we've had the shots. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of excitement around these movies. And I don't know. Of course, they will be filming in faraway regions. They will be filming a lot in Wellington. And so they will probably have to do some crowd control there. Although, of course, the scenes will not take place in the middle of a city like most of the movies that are shot over there where you live in Los Angeles, where they have to shut down entire areas. But and even though they will be filming in remote areas on the Southern Island, I still think that they will have to be careful for fans not to kind of try to get somewhere, you know, sit in a tree and wait for the crew to arrive, and then, I don't know, jump out of the tree in the middle of a scene.
Right, or swipe a prop from the set or something like that.
Well, yeah, that's almost, I mean, I visited the Matamata set where the Shire is, and I just really had to contain myself not to pick up a stone or something like that so I could have this little souvenir from Middle Earth. Now I only have the memories, and I wish I had. I don't know.
Well, I think I've heard, though, that the New Zealanders, at least the natives who live there, are very respectful of the production and the people involved in it, because because they realize, you know, what how big this is for their economy and their country. So they, I think they're very sort of, I think maybe the tourist fans, like if you or I went over there, they'd have to worry about us doing something. But I think these guys are, I think the natives, the New Zealanders are sort of respectful of the production and the crew and all the work that goes into it and stuff.
Of course. And then let's not forget the sensitivity around, you know, certain areas that are considered to be sacred by the real locals, you know. Of course, right. A lot of the people that live nowadays in New Zealand are just migrated there, but the original population consider some, like for instance, the mountains. There are the mountains that we saw in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and that are actually considered to be sacred. And I think that the producers of The Hobbit would like to go back to those mountains, but there is some debate on whether, you know, they will do that or whether that would offend I think they're called Iwis or... you know, this is why we need some people, some Kiwis on the show. They could, they would have so much more to say about these things than we can. But yes. The Iwi, the local Iwi, they consider the mountains. Let's see, the northern, yeah, the mountains, the Tongariro, the Ngaruhu, and the Ruapuhu are considered sacred, and there's, well, they don't want the mountains to be featured in the movies. But then again, of course, there are lots of other mountains that they can use in Middle Earth. We've also heard about a river or some falls that they might want to use, isn't it?
Yes. I don't know whether I want to make the attempt to pronounce it. It's the, it's the Aratiatia.
Or Aratiatia. It's like Meta. There's a lot of repetition in those names. The Aratiatia.
So I guess they're going to use the rapids that are below the spill gates of the dam, plus just the scenery surrounding it for some sort of outdoor shots. I'm guessing this must be the Forest River scenes where they you know, hopefully people read the book, and we're not giving away spoilers here, but where they escape from the Elven Kingdom in Mirkwood via, well, we won't give that away, in a very unusual manner, and they float down the Forest River to Lake Town. So,
well,
that,
hey,
that
well, wait a minute. I think we can talk spoilers on podcast. I mean, come on. Who hasn't read The Hobbit? why would people listen to this podcast if they're not already fans of The Hobbit? I don't think the question is, you know, what's the story going to be, but it's more how is it going to be portrayed?
All right. Okay, so they float down the Forest River in barrels. Bilbo stuffs the poor dwarves inside the barrels and makes them ride in the barrels for several days.
Weren't they captured by wood elves?
Yes.
And then they're put into dungeons?
Yes. In fact, it's to make the connection to Lord of the Rings, it's Legolas's people who are from Mirkwood.
Right.
Yep. And so they capture the dwarves for trespassing on their land, and then they're locked in the dungeons. Bilbo, who has the ring already and isn't captured because he's invisible, sneaks around, eventually manages to break the dwarves out. He notices that the elves have this booming commerce with Lake Town, where they get the barrels of wine, and when they're emptied, they just toss them in the river and float them back down to Lake Town, where the Lake Town guys get the empty barrels and then refill them with wine or whatever. And so Bilbo figures out this is what's going on, and he realizes this is an ideal under-the-radar escape plan. So he breaks the dwarves out, stuffs them in barrels, rolls them into the river, and then floats down the river with them. And the poor dwarves are stuck in these barrels for several days before they arrive at Lake Town.
That's going to be an awesome scene.
I think it's going to be really good, actually. I think it's going to be really fun and kind of goofy.
I'm very excited to hear that they are actually already scouting some different areas from the areas that we've seen in The Lord of the Rings. I think that when I visited New Zealand 2 years ago, James Bergen, who is one of my friends over there, and who might join us in the future on one of these shows, he said that actually the cool thing about New Zealand is that you have almost every type of scenery of every country in the world in this one country of New Zealand. And there's just so much diversity that, you know, it's no wonder that that Peter Jackson just loves to film there, because you can find almost anything, any type of scenery. And then in case there's something missing, you can always add some special effects, but most of the time you won't even need it because it already looks so spectacular.
It is pretty amazing that they use such a tiny little country to represent the diverse scenery of an entire fantasy continent of Middle Earth. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, this is going to be very good for tourism. Already, the Lord of the Rings trilogy was very good to the economy of the island. I guess that now with the two Hobbit movies, this is going to just completely just New Zealand is going to be the place to be for any Tolkien fan. It's going to be a huge, these two new movies are going to be just, you know, hour long commercials for these two islands. I personally can't wait to go back. I've just totally fell in love. And even though I've only been on the Northern Island, I didn't have time to visit the Southern Island. But I was already so impressed with the Northern Island and just the whole atmosphere over there. It just really, it's one of the coolest places on Earth. So, yes, and of course you mentioned that in that particular scene or just before Bilbo puts the dwarves into the barrels, he uses the ring. And I'm wondering if the portrayal of the ring will be the same as the way it was portrayed in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because of course in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the ring has much more importance and has kind of this evil connotation. And so the way that they portray it is kind of scary. Whereas in The Hobbit, as far as I can remember, and I really should start to reread The Hobbit, there is almost none of that kind of seduction of the ring and this kind of dark. What do you think?
Yeah, I had this conversation with a friend a while back. I can't remember who I was talking to about it. We were just joking about, because you know what they do in Lord of the Rings to get that across in the film, that the ring sort of, it's evil and it kind of, you know, it's got all these sort of magical properties and it kind of it puts you into the, you know, sort of halfway into the spirit world and all that. They do that whole ring vision thing where wherever he puts it on, the world around him transforms and gets all blurry and weird, and he hears voices and he sees Sauron, the eyeball lighthouse up in the sky and stuff. And
yep.
That's not going to fit at all into The Hobbit.
It's going to be way too dark for The Hobbit.
Yeah, well, for one thing, yeah, I mean, it certainly will be way too dark because it's just nothing like that. But also, I mean, the guy, he wears the ring for days at a time in the movie, in The Hobbit, and it's really, you know, it's treated like sort of a fun magic, you know, trick magic ring. He uses it for utility. So I'm going to guess they're not going to do that whole ring vision thing, and they're not going to have it whispering to him in a sinister voice and all that kind of stuff. How they'll explain that, or whether they'll even bother to explain it, I couldn't say.
Well, there are a few possibilities. Either you can say, well perhaps the strength of the ring or the seduction becomes greater and the ring becomes more dangerous in The Lord of the Rings, because Sauron has become so much more powerful. He's growing in power, and so perhaps there is some kind of some osmosis going on between Sauron and the power of the ring. Or, and this is another possibility, perhaps Peter Jackson will take the original story of The Hobbit and actually make it darker and retell it and, I don't know, just add layers to it so that the story gets more gravitas and becomes less of a children's story. Now, that, I think, would be a little bit of a betrayal to, that would be betraying the original intent of The Hobbit, which was really meant and written as a children's story, but it could make the story more compelling. Because it does sound, sometimes when you read it, it feels like a fairy tale. And with all the back knowledge, with all the emotion that we already attach to the overall story of The Lord of the Rings, I don't know if they can go back to that kind of happy place, that innocent place. This is not like George Lucas going back in time, doing the prequels, and then pretending that the other three movies don't exist. I don't know if...
If I had to guess, I'd guess what he'll do both. I would venture to guess that there's very little chance that what's going to be translated to screen is going to be have the same sort of carefree, fun, almost whimsical, childish nature that the book has. I mean, because that's the truth of the matter is that while that might be what people who know the book very well would expect. I'm not even convinced that would make a good movie, but certainly the mainstream movie going public is going to be expecting another epic. So
yeah,
I'm sure it's going to be epic. As far as The Ring goes, I think what they'll do is I think they'll go in the direction of what you were saying, which is that Sauron hasn't reached his full power yet. He hasn't even started necessarily really looking for the ring. He thinks it might be gone. He's busy doing other things, and so maybe the ring will be sort of the more sinister nature of it will be kind of asleep or subdued. And so I think probably they'll hint at it. They'll do, you know, various shots and use a little music to sort of hint at it. Maybe
right.
As the movie goes on, one thing they might insert, the one change they might make is maybe they'll show the ring affecting Bilbo a little bit as you know, as time when he wears it a whole bunch. Maybe they'll show him getting, you know, sort of, I don't know, turning, becoming particularly irritable or something like that.
Oh, it would be cool. I think if we could see some kind of an evolution in Bilbo's reaction to the ring, that when he first uses it, it's all, you know, oh, this is cool. And then later on, you can see it's almost like it's portrayed in the Lord of the Rings trilogy almost as a drug addiction. You know, the first time we see Bilbo in the Shire, and he's like, oh, the ring, I need the ring, I must have the ring. He behaves like a drug addict, but that of course is years and years later after the events in The Hobbit.
I think that's the thing. I think they'll have to be careful. On the one hand, I think they'll have to drop some of that in there because otherwise Joe Q public who hasn't read the books is going to watch this and wonder what the heck's going on.
No, the ring is no problem. Why was it such a big deal in The Lord of the Rings?
Right. But at the same time, you know, the whole sort of point of Bilbo is the fact that it took him having the ring for like 50 or 60 years before it really took a hold of him. And so if by the end of this movie he's acting the way he was at the beginning of Lord of the Rings, that kind of, you know, that sort of overlooks the fact that he did, you know, had the ring for 50 years. Although I guess the one thing is that he does wear it and use it a lot in this book. And then when he keeps it in the Shire, he uses it very rarely. And he actually doesn't even necessarily for the longest time, he doesn't even carry it around. And it's only later on when it starts he starts finding that it's on his mind more and more that he starts carrying it around a lot. So I don't think they'll go too overboard. I think they're not going to turn. I think they're going to make this more epic. I don't think it'll look a ton like the I don't think tone wise it won't feel a lot like the book, but I don't think they'll make this into Lord of the Rings too, because it's a very different story.
That would be a mistake.
In this book, the ring's a device, and it's sort of a useful little sort of artifact, and it's really not the main point of the story, and I don't think they'll change that.
True. Yeah, you're right.
I have that much faith in Peter Jackson.
No, you're right, and the ring is not the central character, at least doesn't play the same role as it does in the trilogy. So no. You're right. And what I personally hope is that the film will look a little bit brighter than the trilogy, because that's something that I found really depressing almost, is that in The Lord of the Rings, you see the Shire for just a very brief moment, and then just the whole look of the movie turns, you know, kind of this grayish, like all the color disappears. It's as if the life is sucked out of the image, which was also a bit, it was fancy at the time. A lot of movies copied this or were already doing this. It's kind of this subdued look where, you know, the image deliberately is very grainy and, for some reason, when I rewatched scenes from the Return of the King, it looked dated. I was like, this is a style that shows the period during which this was made. And I hope that The Hobbit will look a little bit brighter and that we get more sunshine, because I was getting a winter depression from watching the trilogy, really. I mean, it's a gloomy story, but come on, give us a break. That was one of the only things that I liked about the third movie, is the Gollum transformation. I think this was only in the extended version, because I've only seen the theatrical release once, and then I've seen the extended version many, many times. But I think that whole story of, you know, Andy Serkis and then slowly turning into Gollum, it started with this scene on the river, you know, and the sun is shining, and it's like, ah, finally, we're not in that gloomy, dark, muddy atmosphere. And then, you know, just 3 minutes later, it's all dark again.
Yeah.
And then it ends with some nice weather in the Shire.
Well, I got bad news for you. There's at least going to be, there's the part where they go down to Goblin Town inside the Blue Mountains, and there's part where they're in Mirkwood. It's going to be kind of dark and depressing.
I know. I'm just hoping here.
But the scenes in the Shire and a lot of the journey stuff, the scenes when they visit Bjorn, the sort of shapeshifter bear man guy, and the scenes in Lake Town, I bet will be very sort of maybe a little brighter. I know they're going to make this into an epic, but I'm sure it's going to be brighter in tone.
I'm sure of it.
It has to be. and if nothing else, think of it this way. Which character out of the Fellowship, which character was the centerpiece of all the sort of stupid lowbrow humor and buffoonery? Gimli the dwarf. Mm-hmm. And Bilbo's going to be traveling with 13 dwarves. So
there's going to be a lot of
stupid humor. And it's in the book, too. The dwarves are kind of buffoons that Bilbo has to keep saving. So so there'll be a lot of humor to keep your spirits uplifted, Father.
Yeah, that's good. I'm already looking forward to that. Actually, that ties us back to the conversation at the beginning of this show or this episode. I think one of the aspects that they kind of hinted at when talking about the casting was that not only do you want to have individuals that can play each dwarf in a certain way, but you also want to have a good team spirit, because that I think was kind of the secret ingredient of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. It was that there was so much chemistry in the Fellowship and among the actors. And if you watch especially the behind the scenes stuff of the final movie, you know, the Return of the King. There you see that, you know, those final scenes, everybody was crying. There's such a huge bond. It turned into this family. And I think that chemistry comes across in the way that they act and interact in the movie. And that's going to be vital for this group of dwarves. You need to have a team and not just individuals. I think that has played a big role in the casting process. And usually what they do is they put, you know, they will have their top list of people that are considered for the roles, and then they just put them together and let them do a table read of certain parts of the script. And then they will also evaluate, so how do these people work together? Is there, you know, do we have the balance that we need in that group of dwarves, which of course is kind of something that you can't really measure. That's where a casting director is so important, because a casting director with all the experience of years and years of casting will immediately kind of sense it if this works. And these people work together. That's, I think, again, one of the problems of the Star Wars prequels, if you allow me to make another Star Wars reference. There was no chemistry. The actors perhaps individually worked well, but come on, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker, that just didn't work at all. And so I have great confidence because I think that was the great strength of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And just knowing that they have the same people involved in the casting process and the production of the movie that they have had for the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I think it makes me kind of relax and trust that it will be a good mix.
Well, if I recall, I think, you know, or I think one of the advantages this movie has over a lot, particularly the Star Wars trilogy, is because so much of it is shot on location in sort of a single, you know, I mean, they're using a lot of different locations in New Zealand, but they're not shooting all over the world. And because they're doing both movies at once, and so they're just going to go down there for the long haul and be down there for, I can't remember. They were there for over a year for The Lord of the Rings. So they'll probably be there for a while for this too. And all the actors sort of, you know, live together in some condos and stuff, that I think that sort of breeds a lot of camaraderie as opposed to, you know, sort of doing off and on shoots and splitting up the movies and not having everybody together for that amount of time. They almost sort of go through a journey. The actors go through a journey of their own in filming the movie. And I think that's part of what helped sort of create that camaraderie and spirit that the Lord of the Rings films certainly have.
That must be difficult for the for the actors that will only have a small role in the story.
Yes, they get left out of that.
Remember that whole story with Christopher Lee, who plays Saruman? And he just didn't become part of the family in a way. I mean, he was just there for the Saruman role, which was really a very small role. He's going to be back, by the way, for at least he's rumored to be back for The Hobbit, for the kind of extended story that they're trying to tell.
Yeah, and he's going to be left out of the main cast camaraderie again.
Well, let's hope they don't leave him out of the credits and they don't cut his scenes, because that was quite a bit of a drama for the Lord of the Rings. Yeah. He refused to go to the premiere because, you know, his scenes were cut. I think they kind of made it up later on, or they reconciled, but my goodness, that's not the kind of publicity that you want around the premiere of a movie. It's like one of those famous actors is not coming because he's mad. Oh, well, he'll probably up his paycheck also a little bit.
Yes.
Hey, speaking of small roles and famous actors, what do I have to think about this rumor of Leonard Nimoy voicing Smaug, the dragon?
Wow, I hadn't even heard of that. Has it gotten past past rumor? Is there any substance to it, or is it
well,
people on the internet?
It's on IMDb, but it says rumored. But I thought that Leonard Nimoy had announced his official retirement from acting, and I think that also included voice acting once he finished his Star Trek role, his final return as Spock in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. I personally think it's more kind of a fanboy wish.
Yes.
However, I think PR-wise, it could be this masterful strategy of, you know, getting all those Star Trek fans to watch to watch The Hobbit.
Yes.
After well, all, also, the ears are compatible, right? They're same kind of pointy ears.
And I hear that he's a pretty big, I think he's a Lord of the Rings Tolkien fan.
Oh.
And I don't know if you ever heard that song that he did a long time ago.
Oh, no. I systematically refuse to listen to that, because that is just going to destroy the mental image of Spock that I have. Like, it's bad enough that you know, there's some singing in the original Star Trek. Those episodes, I just systematically skip them because it hurts too much. But he did a song about the Hobbit?
Yes. Yeah, don't search for it on YouTube, because if you watch the video, that'll destroy your mental image even more.
Hold on. But now I have to play it.
I don't know why he did it. It's sort of a comedy thing, but it's basically a song about Bilbo Baggins, and Leonard Nimoy sings it. So all the hardcore Tolkien fans would probably love it if he got to do some voice acting. But I have a feeling that's just a rumor. It's kind of like the David Tennant rumor too. Everyone thinks that the old Doctor Who actor is going to be in this too. But
hold on, you made me. I'm too curious now. I have to watch this. Leonard Nimoy's Ballad of Bilbo Baggins. Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh, this is like the 70s movie clip.
Yep.
Oh Lord, this is terrible. There are two videos here. There's a color one, and this is an uncut full Ballad of Nimoy. Let's see if the audio is better on this one. Oh no, it's a lot worse actually. This is unplayable. Anyway, well, I'll include a link for the brave among our listeners. If they want to check this out, they can go over to our show notes on sqpn.com and check out the full song for themselves. Leonard Nimoy. All right, it's time to start wrapping this show up. And I want to do that with some feedback. We've had some great feedback from our listeners. Of course, we've just posted our first episode, but we're already getting some reviews, or well, not reviews, but some reactions from our initial batch of listeners. People seem to like what we did in the first show. We've had some feedback on our Facebook page. We've created a special page on Facebook called Secrets of the Hobbit. Just put that in the search window in Facebook and it'll bring you to the page. And we got some encouraging feedback from Gisela and Melanie, and some suggestions also for our send-off. You know, at the end of the show, we were looking for something to say, and so Melanie has posted some Sindarin and Quenya greetings. Quenya stuff, which I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce because I'll make a fool of myself. I think I already completely, I disqualify as a Tolkien fan for like 99% of the listeners anyway. But I'm here to represent all those noobs, you know, these Tolkien people that love the movies, have perhaps read The Hobbit, but you know, and then Dave is here to represent all the other listeners, the true
the
Tolkien
snobs.
Fans. Yeah. The comic book guys, but then the Hobbit versions of that. Yeah. So keep sending us email on the Facebook page. We really appreciate that. We'll also post some stuff on Twitter. We might set up a Twitter account. I'm not sure yet. You can also send us email. We already have a Tolkien-related email address that we've been using for Secrets of Middle-Earth, which is our fellow show about Middle-Earth, and this is more geared towards the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But we're going to use the same email address because we assume that a lot of the listeners will listen to both shows. So that's Tolkien@sqpn.com. Tolkien@sqpn.com. We've also been accepted and admitted to the iTunes Music Store. So our podcast is now very easy to find in the iTunes Music Store. You can subscribe there. And this is where I would like to call our listeners for some action here. Leave us a review on iTunes. I know from experience that is the most efficient way to point new listeners to this show. It's when you leave a review, it gets noticed and it becomes more visible in the ratings on iTunes, and that's how a lot of people will find this show. So if you like what we're doing, if you want to encourage us, leave a review, or if you don't have time to write a review, although you can just do, you know, just post 3 or 4 sentences about the show. You can also give it stars So, of course, we hope that you will give it 5 stars, even though the show is definitely not what it's going to be. But because we've just started, and we're just getting used to doing all this. But we hope that you want to encourage us, and especially encourage all your fellow Tolkien fans and Hobbit fans to start listening and contributing to the shows. We also would love to hear your questions and feedback, and perhaps even, you know, get your scoops on what's going on around The Hobbit. If you're involved in the production somehow, and you wanna, and you're able, and you're allowed to talk about what's going on there in New Zealand, just, you know, send us an email, tolkien@sqpn.com, or reach us via I don't know, Twitter or Facebook or any other way. We would love to get some involvement from our listeners. After all, we do this show for you. That's about it. Oh, of course, I almost forgot the tip of the week. Dave, do you have a tip of the week?
Yeah, I'm going to go with go on Google and search for Hobbit Press Conference, and go find the link. Go find the story on there's this. It's this New Zealand news channel. It's 3 News, the digit 3 and then news. But I think if you search Hobbit Press Conference, you'll find it. And there's 38 minutes of video on there of their press conference, and it's almost all Q&A. So it's kind of fun. Go watch that.
Sweet ass. As they say in New Zealand, I think. And that's with one S. Just so you know. My tip of the week is a book that appeared a couple of years ago. And I got it secondhand in when I was in the U.S. in, I think, one of the Borders bookstore. It's called The Origins of Tolkien's Middle-earth for Dummies. That's one of the longest dummies titles that I've ever seen. The Origins of Tolkien's Middle-earth for Dummies. So it's in the famous For Dummies series, and it is fascinating. It's really a cool book. It gives you a lot of background about Middle-earth. So it's very much based on the, you know, the different areas in Middle-earth. And it's slightly Lord of the Rings centric. So it does not have much information about The Hobbit, but, you know, it's just very well written. It's just an awesome book to just read and browse through, and gives you some information about the inspiration for the Hobbit and for the Lord of the Rings. It gives you kind of a primer on the different languages that you will find in Middle Earth. It even has the Sirth script. So you can learn how to write in Elvish.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And gives you, it's just, I just love reading it. I've not read this in a linear way, but I'm just every once in a while, I just pick it up and just read a chapter or so. It's awesome. So we'll include a link to that book on the Amazon store. That's where you get a very good price for it. Better price than I paid for it. So that'll be my tip of the week. Again, thank you so much for joining us today on this second episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. Spread the word. Check out all our other shows on sqpn.com. You'll find a lot of shows. If you look on the page called Productions, you will find links to many other shows that we do, among which, of course, Secrets of Middle Earth, but we also do The Secrets of Secrets of Narnia, Secrets of Star Wars, Secrets of Star Trek, Secrets of Harry Potter. I mean, a lot of shows based on movies and books. I've got my weekly show called The Break, where I talk a lot about movies, video games, and many other passions that I have. And of course, Dave, you are also one of the hosts of Secrets of Middle Earth, and we're currently in production of... This is almost like... You know, a Peter Jackson production. We're currently preparing the launch of our second season of episodes. And we've already recorded a few very cool interviews, and perhaps we can lift the how do you say that? Give people a little idea of what we have in store for them. We interviewed two celebrities, right? For Secrets of Middle Earth.
They're two sort of. at least somewhat well-known Tolkien scholars, One of them, of course, was Corey Olson, who is the Tolkien professor, according to Google anyway, in his own clever branding several years ago. And he, of course, does the Tolkien professor podcast, and he teaches at Washington College over on the East Coast, and he occasionally records the classes that he teaches and posts those. In fact, he's doing one this spring called Fairy and Fantasy, and so it's just reading classic fairy tales, and so that he's putting all kinds of stuff on iTunes now. And the other gentleman is Jason Jewell, who's otherwise known as Pungo over at Casual Stroll to Mordor. And he's actually also a professor of humanities and history down at Faulkner College in Alabama. He's known by his students there as the other Tolkien professor, apparently.
Very cool.
we talked to Corey about just sort of all things Tolkien, and focus particularly on hobbits and the Shire. And we talked to Jason about the Inklings and about the relationship between Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. So
absolutely. So go check that out at sqpn.com, or you can go directly to secrets.sqpn.com. You'll find also an overview of all those movie and book-based shows that we produce. Thank you for listening, and well, we promised you that we would have a phrase to sign off, and we kind of crowdsourced this before recording the episode, and someone in the chat room came up with a quote from The Hobbit itself, from Chapter 18, which we both really liked, and it's something that Thorin Oakenshield says to Bilbo when they say goodbye, and here it is. "Farewell, good thief," he said. "I go now to the halls of waiting to sit beside my fathers until the world is renewed. Since I leave now all gold and silver and go where it is of little worth, I wish to part in friendship from you, and I would take back my words and deeds at the gate." And then, actually, this was not what I wanted to read. There was another one. Where is it? Oh, here it is. Here it is.
The other one.
Yeah, this is a bit reading the wrong paragraph. This is Thorin. This is nice. "There is more in you," and this is also not just about Bilbo, but about all our listeners. "There is more in you of good than you know, child of the kindly West. Some courage and some wisdom blended in measure. If more of us valued food and cheer and song above hoarded gold, it would be a merrier world. But sad or merry, I must leave it now. Farewell." And thanks for listening. See you next time on The Secrets of the Hobbit.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.